ಓಂ ಜ್ಞಾನ ತಿಮಿರಾಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನ ಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋವಿಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಶ್ರೀಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಂ ಸಹಗಣ ರಘುನಾಥಾನ್ವಿತಂ ತಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ ಸಹಗಣಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀ ವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ನಮೋ ಮಹಾವದಾನ್ಯಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಪ್ರದಾಯತೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ನಾಮನೆ ಗೌರವಶೇ ನಮಃ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧೌ ದೀನಬಂಧೌ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ. ಸಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗಿ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನೋ ಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಸೇ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಕದಾಧ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. Respected director, department heads and officers, doctors and other members of KLE hospital, I am extremely happy to be in your midst after 1 year. I was here last year to speak on the subject of happiness. From the point of view of the Bhagavad Gita, because happiness is a subject that is so dear to all of us. Every living being needs happiness and is striving for happiness. And in as much as happiness is an important subject for us, so is today's subject, which is karma and the law of reincarnation. Because karma and happiness are very much interrelated. Happiness and reincarnation are very much interrelated. In the Bhagavad Gita, we see a very scientific presentation of certain natural laws of a subtle nature, which are very important for all of us to understand. In hospital like this, you are dealing with laws of nature. You are dealing with a science which is very important for our well-being in the world, but it is of a gross nature. There are also sciences of a subtle nature, which it is very important for us to try to unravel and understand. The present science cannot go into the subtleties and complexities of this spiritual science, because concepts like soul, etc., are beyond the reach of our technology and instruments. So some other methodology, some other system of verification, experience, etc., are necessary. If, however, we, with an open mind, exact teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, then we can only be greatly benefited. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is an astonishing amount of wealth of knowledge, which, if used properly, can give us complete well-being. Colonel Singh was just mentioning some time back that the WHO definition of health also includes the spiritual part. It is not that one can be happy only by physical or even mental well-being. Unless the spiritual aspect is added to our life, we cannot be happy. In order to be happy, one must know the laws of nature. If I need to have good health, I need to know what is bad for my health, what is good for my health, what kind of lifestyle should I lead and should I not lead, what kind of diet should I have. And especially when I am sick, I go to a specialist, and then according to the directions I receive, I live my life according to that. These are laws of nature. If I have a certain disease, if I eat a certain kind of prohibited foodstuff, my disease will become worse. It's a law of nature. And if I do not know or follow the laws of nature, I will be in trouble. Similarly, we all need to know the laws of nature given in Bhagavad Gita in order for us to attain real happiness in life. Many people in the world, they act without thinking. They perform activities at the most thinking about a short-term welfare. But they do not think of consequences that this action may have in the longer term. And at the most, people think about the extent of this life. we take out life insurance policy, and so on. Because in case something happens to us, those who are near and dear to us will be taken care of. That is the most we go up to. But scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita tell us that we should not restrict our planning only to the point of death. We should extend our planning to even what is beyond. So herein lies the most mysterious and important question. What lies after death? Modern science does not have an understanding of this subject. But the spiritual science of the Gita has an understanding. It gives us complete knowledge that there are many things that happen beyond death, and that depends on the kind of karma or activities that we perform. Karma is nothing but action, activity. All of us are performing activities in this world at every moment. Nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishthatya karmakrit. Bhagavad Gita says there is not a moment that you cannot do something. Even the most idle and lazy man has to do something. In fact, his idleness is also a kind of activity. And that karma also generates its own reactions. For example, if somebody is extremely lazy and likes to sleep 12, 13, 14 hours a day, then that will also generate its own reaction. We see that in the various species of life, there are some species like the bears, which can sleep for months together. In the northern hemisphere, the polar bears sleep for 6 months, and then they're awake for 6 months. So if one wants to sleep for a long time, then the human body is not an appropriate body for that. It is not an optimal utilization of nature's resources. Mother Nature thinks, I have given this soul, a human body, for something higher. But this soul wants to utilize this only for sleeping. So why not optimally utilize my resources? I will give the kind of body that can fulfill this person's desires. He wants to sleep. So in the next lifetime, he should become a bear. Be of a bear and fulfill all his dormant desires of the previous life. He can now sleep for 6 months in a year without having any problems. I had gone to one college to give lecture, and I was asking the students, I was basically describing how rising early in the morning is so beneficial, sleeping early at night and rising early is so important for good health, for good wisdom and everything. And I was asking them what time they get up in the morning. And then I was surprised to receive the responses. Starting from 8 o'clock in the morning, it went up to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So they are sleeping for 12 hours, 13 hours, 14 hours in a day. So even whether one is young or old, one has to think, I am sleeping so much, what is going to be the consequences of my action? Of course, the immediate consequences are obvious. He misses his classes, he gets bad marks in the examination, fails, and then the consequent results of that, that is only one aspect of it. But what is he doing to his life as a human being? That he doesn't reflect upon. Similarly, every other activity that we are doing in life, from the smallest activity to the most important, everything has its bearing upon our well-being or otherwise in the future. Every action we perform, fortunately or unfortunately, is irreversible. This is the law of karma. You perform an action. Once you have performed it, you cannot take it back. Just like an arrow shot from a bow, or a bullet released from a gun, or a word once spoken, it cannot be taken back. All of us may have experience that in the heat of the moment, in anger, we may say something to someone, and then a few moments later we repent. Oh, I should not have said it. But it's too late. The word has already gone out of the mouth. The damage has been done. So karma is like that. Once we have done an action, then it is done. And we have to face the reaction. And the law of karma states that for every action that we perform in life, there must be a reaction. I think all of you will remember from your school days, you have studied physics, Newton's laws of motion. Yes? For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. But that operates not only on the gross scale, but even on the subtle scale of our actions as a human being. If I speak harshly to someone, that harsh dispute which is causing to someone else, that will come back to me in one form or the other, in equal measure. Someone somewhere at some time in the future will give me back a dose of my own medicine. If I am treating people well, that is being regular in my account. And in course of time, that reaction is due to me, a corresponding reaction is due to me. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam tathaiva bhajamyaham. This is the formula that Lord Krishna outlines in Gita. As we deal with others, so others shall deal with us. Nature will act using other people, other phenomena as instruments. Whatever pain we cause to others will surely return to us. Whatever happiness we give to others will also surely return to us. It's like a boomerang. In Australia, the tribes, they use a weapon. They throw it, it is elliptical, parabolic shaped. And they throw it, it does its work and comes back to them in their own hand. So karma is like a boomerang. So every time we act, an intelligent person must think, what is going to be the consequence of this action? It is going to come back to me. So who desires to receive pain? Who desires to receive humiliation? Who desires discomfort? So we act in such a way that we do not give pain to others, we do not humiliate or insult others, and so on. But nature is not so simple. The way we see that even when we deal nicely with other people for years together, still others may not deal well with us. And also we may see, secondly, that in the execution of our duties, sometimes it is necessary to be harsh. For example, a parent must sometimes be harsh with the child. The child may not want to go to school, but the parent has to be harsh and say, no, you have to go to school. So as part of the duty the parent is doing for the welfare of the child, some amount of harshness is there. But because that is well motivated, it is done with proper knowledge, it is done for the ultimate welfare of the person to whom we are speaking like that, that will have a different category of reaction. But nevertheless, the point is that the law of karma holds. For every action, there will be an equal and opposite reaction coming to us. Good actions have good reactions, bad actions have bad reactions. Now this law is inviolable, which means no one can escape this law of nature. We see that fugitives are running away from the state or the law of the state. Like our, Virappan. Yes, people are trying to catch him for so many years, they are unable. He is hiding in the forest. Or some other famous smugglers and antisocial elements, they are hiding in some other countries, away from the hands of the law in this country. So it is possible to some extent for people to hide from the laws of the state. But one cannot hide from the laws of nature. There is no rescue. We have to face it. In any species of life, the reaction must come back to us. So the question then arises that we are honest people. Many people ask this question. We are always doing good to others. We have never intentionally done harm to others. Then why is it that bad things happen to us? Or there are so many other people who are not good people, but they seem to be enjoying, they're having a good time. So the good people are suffering, the bad people are enjoying. This is a very popular perception, and we see this happening many times. So this question is a common question that occurs even to great philosophers and religious people. God, why bad things happen to good people? This book was written by a religious person from the Jewish faith. He was a rabbi, he was a priest. And he had a son who had some disease, I don't remember medically what the name, but you age very fast. And by the time he was 12 years old, he appeared like a man of 80 or 90 years old. And this father was extremely upset. And in his book he was reasoning, so why does this happen to me? I am such a noble soul. I am a godly soul. I have not done any harm to anyone in life. Yet, why do I have to have the suffering of seeing my son like this and dying in front of my eyes in this way? So he tried to reason out. And what was the conclusion? He said, there are some possibilities. He said, number one possibility is that God is not powerful enough to stop this injustice. So therefore, certain things, evil influences are stronger than God. So there is injustice in this creation. That is one possibility, he said. The second possibility He said, yes, God may be all powerful, but He is not all good. Although He could have stopped my son from suffering, still He has not prevented. Because He has His own agenda. He has some other interest in mind. So therefore, He has let this happen to my son. The third option that he said is that God is all good, but He is not all powerful. He wants to do good to my son, but He is helpless. So like this, he went on reasoning, and he made so many reasons. And his book became a best-seller book. One can understand how this question is perplexing and bewildering the minds of people. You have all heard of Time magazine, very famous magazine. And some years ago, the cover story in this magazine was, what is evil? A surprisingly philosophical issue for a news magazine like Time to come up with, which goes to show that this question is really bewildering people. And I read through that article, and there were so many such speculations like this, all conjectures, ifs, but, maybes, possibilities. But when we understand Bhagavad Gita, then we see everything crystal clear. No doubt remains from this wonderful philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. Before I go on to explain how the Bhagavad Gita explains this, I would like to mention one more thing that bewilders people about how good people are suffering and bad people are enjoying. This is a small story about two friends. These two friends met after many years. And naturally, when friends meet, they will talk about how everything, how is life, how is your business, and so on. And then they ask each other, where are you going? It is nice that we have met on the road now, so where are you going? So the first friend said, he said, there is a temple there which is just opened, and we have heard that some sadhu has come there to give lecture on Bhagavad Gita. So I am going there to attend the lecture. So then he asked the other friend, where are you going? He said, I am going here, there is a new beer bar that is opening. And I am going there for the inauguration because the owner is going to serve free liquor to everyone. So I am going there. And some other entertainment programs are going to be held there. So the first friend said, why don't you come here? That is not a good path for you to follow. The second friend said, why don't you come here? That is not a good path. That is only a path for sentimental people who want to escape from reality. So you come with me. But anyway, both friends went in their own respective paths. And time went by. The person who had gone to the temple, he started hearing the lectures, he started understanding philosophy, he started practicing, he started making good progress on the spiritual path. And on the other hand, the other friend started making good progress on that path. So he started drinking more, he started associating more with that kind of people, and his life went on in that direction. Now, as it happened, as destiny would have it, the first person who had gone to the temple, his business started to crumble. He started making losses. And very soon, within few months' time, he was practically on the roads. And the other friend who had gone to the beer bar, hedonistic lifestyle, his business started prospering like anything. And money was just pouring in. And he was moving from strength to strength in his business, expanding his business, and so on. After several months, maybe a year or two, the friends again bumped into each other on the road. Meanwhile, they had heard about each other's conditions. And when they met on the road, the second friend told the first one, just see, I told you that when you go there is nothing to gain. See what has happened to your life. You have lost everything. And look at me. I have become such a successful person. I have everything. After all, what is this question of sin and piety and God? Who is there to see what is going to happen in next life? Kal kisne dekha hai? Who has seen what is tomorrow? Come on, enjoy. This is a very famous philosophy, the atheistic philosophy of enjoyment, regardless of the law of karma. There was a famous atheistic muni in the past called Charvak Muni, who would have this philosophy. And he would say, Rinam kritva ghatam pibet, yava jivet sukham jivet, bhasmi bhutasya dehasya, kim punaragamano bhavet. He says, Rinam kritva, even if it means you have to take a loan, you have to beg, borrow or steal, doesn't matter. But Ghritam Pibet. Ghritam means ghee. You eat ghee. You see, good food means food cooked in ghee. That was the standard. Cow's milk, you make ghee out of that, and you then eat food cooked in that. It is very rich food, very delicious, tasty food. So that is one indication of the good quality of life. So Charvak Muni says, doesn't matter where you get the money from, how you get the money, you beg, you borrow, you steal, you do anything, but live life, enjoy life properly. After all, bhasmi bhutasya dehasya, this body is going to become bhasma, it is going to become reduced to ashes. Kim punar agamano bhavet, who has seen next life, who knows what will happen after death, everything is destroyed at death, so enjoy. So atheistic philosophy was prevalent even in those days. So the second friend was a living embodiment of that principle. So he started enticing the first friend, you also come on my path and then see how you will enjoy life. The first friend became very disturbed. He went to the sadhu next day and inquired. He said, this is my predicament. I have come to you. I am enjoying this, but see what has happened. I am suffering in this way. My business is lost. And with my friend, the exact opposite is happening. So I am a little confused now. So please explain to me how I am to understand this phenomenon. So the sadhu smiled and very patiently began to explain. He said, Siddha, my dear friend, I will explain to you very nicely. He said, see, every action that you perform in life will always have its reaction. It may come now, it may come later, it may come much later. It may come even in the next life. The next life, after all, simply a continuation for the soul in another body. We are the soul. The soul continues to exist even when the body is destroyed. So death is nothing but the departure of the soul from the body, and the soul enters through the medium of the father into another mother's womb, and a new life starts in this way. And the karma carries forward to the next life. So if you don't receive the reactions of your karma in this life, surely you will receive it in the next, or the next, or at some suitable time. But the laws of nature will act. You will get the reaction. So now you are doing spiritual activity. You are leading a good life. So rest assured, have faith. You will get the reactions coming into this in course of time. But you must be patient. In the meanwhile, because you have taken in all seriousness to this path of surrender to God, God wishes very quickly to relieve you of the cycle of birth and death in which you are trapped. So whatever your past sins have been in the previous lives, and perhaps He is giving you a concentrated dose at one time, so that it is all finished off. The stock of sins that you have accumulated is taken care of, and now you have a clean slate, and now you are ready for the highest bliss of divine bliss, of going back to the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. And as far as your friend is concerned, because he is going on this path, so God has given him the benefits, results of all the pious activities he has ever done in the past and which he has not yet received so far. He is getting that now. And in course of time, he will exhaust those pious activities by enjoyment. The more he enjoys, the more quickly he will exhaust. And then what will he be left with? He will be left with the reactions of all his bad activities that he is doing now. And that will be his future. So his future will be suffering, and your future will be bliss. So do not think only in terms of the present or the immediate future. Understand that the laws of nature and the hand of God, though invisible, will always act for the welfare of all. And if one has surrendered to the will of God, then there can never be any injustice. There is a saying in Hindi which is very popular. Bhagwan ke darbar mein der ho sakta hai lekin andher nahi. There can be some time in the meeting out of some justice, but it will never go without a reaction coming. Justice will always be done. So this law of karma acts in a very subtle way, and people become bewildered because they do not see the invisible hands of the laws of nature working. How often is it that we have asked the question to ourselves, why me? Why is this happening to me? Every time somebody suffers something, which he or she believes is not due to him or her. Many times we may be blamed for something. We may enter into some situation where out of the blue some calamity comes upon us. And we are always thinking, why is it happening to me? So nothing happens by chance. It is always a reaction, a result of something that is happening from the past. It is our actions that are yielding us the reactions that come in this life. So the law of karma acts in this way. The human species is a very, very important species because the actions performed in the human species bring about reactions which are long-lasting. Actions performed in other species of life, like a cat or a dog or a bird, those actions do not have reactions that have repercussions in other lives. But in the human form of life, whatever we do will have an action that will cause a reaction in the next life also. That is why we see sometimes there may be a dog who is on the road, a stray dog. He suffers. Many times you may have seen stray dogs who are diseased, who are hungry, who are always troubled by the other stray dogs, and they suffer like anything. And sometimes there is a dog who is brought up in a rich man's house. He sleeps on a Dunlopillo bed and he is given bath with shampoo and he is taken to beauty parlor. He gets all the benefits that any rich man would get. He is cuddled, he is modeled, he is everything, all kinds of things are done. Abroad, there are actually beauty saloons for animals. And people take their pet dogs there and give them shampoo and they comb them and brush them and there's so much care. Why? Why, if a dog species is coming as a result of bad karma, why is it that one dog is like this and one dog is like that? The answer is that the person, that the soul, has performed this bad karma to get a dog's body, but simultaneously has also performed some good karma, as a result of which he gets a dog's body in a good condition. Those who have performed only bad actions, they get a dog's body and a bad condition. So it is not possible to describe the very complex intricacies of the law of karma. But we have got some hint or some idea of it by understanding these simple examples. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Gahano karmana gatihi. To understand the workings of karma is very, very difficult. One cannot understand. But if we simply understand that every action will bring its reaction, it may be instant, it may be delayed, it may be very delayed. An example of delayed karma may be the AIDS problem. The symptoms may manifest after as long as even 20 years, I am told. So the person does, we're immediately getting the response of our karma. So there is instant karma, there is delayed karma, there is very delayed karma. So the question now comes up, how is this karma linked up with reincarnation? Now, having accepted that every action must have its reaction, let us consider what happens when death intervenes. Death must come. It will come at some point in time. So when death comes, then what happens? Death will come suddenly, perhaps without notice, mostly without notice. What happens to all those actions for which we have not yet received the reactions? What happens to those actions? Is it that when death comes, we will no longer receive those reactions? No. The laws of nature must act. If we have performed action, the reaction must come. So in order to receive the reaction to the actions we have performed, we must get born again. We must take another body. In order to receive the reactions that we have, reactions to the actions we have performed in the previous life. So who takes birth again? It is the Atma. The Bhagavad Gita informs us that we are not the body, but we are the eternal spiritual soul. The soul is located in the region of the heart. It is a spiritual spark, spiritual energy. It is driving this body, much as an electric current drives this tape recorder or this microphone, or much as a driver drives a car. Even though the car may be in good condition, but if the driver is not in the car, then the car cannot move. In the same way, even if the body is in good condition, but if the Atma or the soul is not there, then the body is useless. So the soul survives eternally. There is no end to the soul. But when the body becomes unfit for habitation, then the soul leaves the body. According to the karma that we have performed in previous lives, our time span is fixed in this life. It is explained, it is a number of breaths that we have. All of us, when we are born in this world, we come with our destiny written on our forehead, so to speak. That means that the amount of happiness, the amount of distress we will have in life, is the time of our death, the manner of our death, is also predetermined. What kind of husband or wife we will get is also predetermined. What kind of family life we will have is also predetermined. Many things in life, the sufferings and joys to be specific, are predetermined according to the kind of karma that we have performed in previous lives. So the question comes that if these things are predetermined, then is there any scope for free will? Colonel Singh was raising a question in our discussion just before coming here, that everything is happening by the will of God. So if I am performing a murder, that means it is happening by the will of God, and therefore I am not responsible. God is responsible, isn't it? This, of course, is an argument that is very commonly put forward in the world around us. So it is very important to see the connection between free will and destiny and God, these three things. Destiny, free will, and God. Now, what is destiny? Destiny, very simply put, is the reactions to our karma that are yet to come or that has just arrived. For example, I remember seeing a man who was walking peacefully along the footpath and minding his own business, and suddenly some truck going somewhere, from under the wheel there was a rock or stone that flew and hit his head, and he went to the hospital. I don't know what happened after that. No fault of his. He was just walking along. He had no connection with that truck. He just went and he got this stone on the head and he was taken to the hospital. Maybe he survived, maybe he didn't, I don't know. So the point is that there are things that are happening to us which are beyond our control. And such a person, this suffering or this result that is coming about in his life is coming as a result of something that he has done before. That means this is destined for him. Why is it destined for him? Because it is a reaction to some karma he has done in the past. So that destiny came. Destiny cannot be avoided. It must come. So in other words, to conclude, destiny is nothing but the reactions to our actions performed previously. That is coming to us or that will come to us. That fraction of the destiny that has already arrived is called prarabdha karma. That means all of us already have a certain kind of body, we have a certain kind of family, we have certain kind of wealth and ability, etc. Someone is extremely brilliant, someone is born mentally retarded, someone is born in a slum in a very poor family, someone is born in a very rich family. Now this is prarabdha karma. That part of the destiny which has arrived, which we are now experiencing. And then in future, we are going to receive some more, which we have not yet received now. That would be our destiny for the future. So what is the relationship between destiny and free will? How did this destiny come? The destiny being a reaction, that means it is coming as a response to the action that I had performed earlier. And why did I perform that action? How did I perform that action? Out of my free will. So that action has a reaction which I am forced to receive. So then, is destiny everything? Can destiny be changed? Destiny can be changed before the action takes place, not after the action. For example, if there is a man who wants to jump from the top of a building, he is very frustrated with life and he wants to end his life. And he's standing on the terrace and he's about to jump. Now, if he jumps, then death is definite. If he doesn't jump, some hope. He can still survive. So question is, once he jumps, then what is his destiny? Death. So can he say that since death is destined, therefore I should jump? No. He had free will. When he was standing on the edge of the building, about to jump, he had his free will to jump or not jump. At that time, his destiny was in his hands. He was a master of his own destiny. But once he jumped, he performed that karma of acting, then destiny is no longer in his hands. He has performed the action and he must face a reaction. At that time, if he is jumping from a 10-storied building, he is falling down. By the time he comes to the 5th floor, if he changes his mind, oh, I should not have jumped, it is too late. The action has been done and now he must receive the destiny of that. He is destined to die in that way. That means we have control on our destiny to the extent that we check our actions, not after performing actions. So we also are the cause of our own destiny. We are the makers of our own destiny, although we may not remember it. We may not remember so many actions we have performed even in this life. So what think of the previous lives? Especially when you consider that at every moment we have performed actions. And if we are 20, 30, 50, 60 years old in this life, then just imagine how many actions we have performed. So we cannot possibly remember everything we have done. So free will and destiny is like that. And where does God come in the picture? God sanctions the activities that the individual does. It is not exactly that it happens with the will of God. It happens with the sanction of God. There is a difference between something happening by the will of God and by the sanction of God. When God wills means God wants it to happen. But sanction means he doesn't want it to happen, but he allows it to happen. Just like a father, he has a teenage son and he wants a motorcycle. And father is worried, oh, if he gets motorcycle, he will drive fast and he will have accident and so many things. But he understands his son is insisting. So he says, all right, okay, he does it. Sanctions. He's not happy about it. But still he grants it. So this is the difference between will and sanction. So God is forever sanctioning the activities of the living beings depending on their karma. Even God does not freely sanction everything. He will see to what extent our karma permits us for him to sanction. Just like if I have 10,000 rupees in the bank, I do not, just an example. If I have 10,000 rupees in the bank, I can only withdraw up to 10,000. The bank manager will not allow me to withdraw 10,100 rupees. But if I put another 1,000 rupees, then he will allow me to withdraw 11,000. So, God will also sanction our karma, our activities, depending on what kind of stock of karma or destiny we already have. For example, if I am not destined to become a millionaire, whatever I may do, I may buy any number of lottery tickets, I may start any business, I will never become a millionaire. So at that time, God will not sanction my activities and desires to become a millionaire. But if I am destined to become a millionaire, then without my purposely striving for it, I will still become a millionaire. Maybe some uncle somewhere sends some inheritance to me out of the blue, or something happens and I become a millionaire. So this is a relationship. So at every moment, we have free will. Also, destiny is acting upon us, and the will of God is required to sanction it. Imagine for a moment that there is a bull. A bull is tied by a rope to a pole, and there is green grass around the pole. The bull is moving round and round, and he's eating the grass. So the question I wish to ask is the bull free or not free? What would you answer? I beg your pardon? Is the bull free or is not free? Not free, but he's still moving here and there. He's still moving back and forth and left and right and round. He is free, but your statement, your answer needs to be qualified. He is free to the extent of the length of the rope. Am I right? He is not totally free. At the same time, he is not totally bound also. Within the limit of the extent of the rope, he is allowed to move. But once he pulls and comes to, when the rope is pulled to its full length, beyond that he can't move. The radius the circle formed by the radius that is equal to the size of the rope, length of the rope, that is the limit of his freedom. Similarly, we also have the limits imposed by our destiny. We cannot cross that. Within the limits of your destiny, you can use your free will to either increase the length of the rope further for the future or to decrease the length of the rope. So at every moment, these three forces will act. Free will, the destiny which is performed by our free will in the past, and the hand of God, which is therefore sanctioning everything. And this ultimately determines what kind of life we will get in the next life. Please note that this is a very scientific thing happening here. This knowledge is all described in the Bhagavad Gita. I am explaining in very simple language certain examples by which we can all understand these points. People make the mistake of thinking that these are all books like Gita, etc., are sentimental books meant for those who are sentimental, but it is not. I hope that we have received a glimpse of how sophisticated this whole philosophy is, how much there is for us to think about. So in this way, when one acts in this way in certain ways, one gets a kind of body that is appropriate to the kind of actions we have performed in this life. As I mentioned earlier, one may either receive the body of a human being, it may be the body of an animal, it may be the body of a bird, any kind of body. So Bhagavad Gita urges us to reflect, to plan not only for this life, but also to plan for the future lives. We should all be thinking, what kind of body am I going to get in the next life? I have to prepare my next body. So human life is especially meant for preparing ourselves for the next body. In short, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajityante kalivaram tam tam eva iti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitah. Lord Krishna explains in the Gita, whatever your state of consciousness at the time of death, that state you will attain in the next life. If one has cultivated divine consciousness, one attains to a divine position. If one has cultivated animalistic consciousness, one develops an animal body. So this level of consciousness is determined by what kind of actions we do in this life, by what kind of work we do, by what kind of company we keep, what kind of thoughts we have in this life. All through, just like for a student, the kind of studies he or she has done throughout the academic year will determine the performance in the examination. Similarly, the kind of life we have led throughout our life will determine the state of our consciousness at the time of death. And depending on the state of consciousness at death, our next body is being prepared for us by the laws of nature. And the soul, when the time comes, it will have to leave this gross body and accept another body. And in that body, we will not have any remembrance of what the previous body was. But in this body, we can understand, based on our activities, what kind of body we are going to get in the future. So Bhagavad Gita urges us, prepare for it. Lord Krishna in the Gita says, we should practice divine thinking, divine life, divine practices to cultivate divine consciousness. Divine consciousness means to constantly think about God, to chant His names, to remember Him, to serve Him. Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram yah prayati samadbhavam yati nasyatra samshayah. Lord Krishna explains, antakale, at the time of, at the last moment, when one is about to quit the body, if one remembers God, then one will go back to quit the body. If one remembers God, then one will go back to God. One will be forever free from the cycle of karma. Karma and its reaction brings about bondage. Bondage to the cycle of birth and death, where we constantly have to take another body, give it up, take another body, give it up, and this is called the wheel of samsara, where we have to move, reincarnate in various species of life, life after life, and this has been going on from time immemorial. And unless we lead a very divine life of remembering and chanting God's names, we will remain in the cycle again indefinitely for the future. So by leading such a divine life, by chanting God's names, coming in holy association, one can cut this chain of karma. One can break through the bondage of the laws of karma. and return to one's original spiritual existence, never to come back in this world, which is certified by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita to be a place of misery. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. This material world is a place of dukkha, of suffering. No one can be happy in this world, and there is no exception to this rule. Just like Himalaya is the abode of him or snow, the Vidyalaya is the abode of vidya or knowledge, this material world is the abode of dukkha, suffering. So no one can be free from this dukkha until he or she permanently takes to a divine life to cut this bondage of karma. So long as we are still trapped in this bondage of karma, we can never be happy, because we will be forced to take birth again and again and again. And each time we will have to undergo the pain of death, the pain of birth, the pain of old age, the pain of disease, and all the other pains and sufferings that we have to endure in our existence in any body in this world. So an understanding of the law of karma and of reincarnation, therefore, in a very scientific way, is very, very important, so that we can analyze which way our life is heading. We should all take some moments off from our busy schedules. We should introspect. We should think deeply about what the goal of our life is. We should think where we are heading. Ultimately, are we going to be happy by doing what we are doing? What is going to be my next life? How do I prepare for a spiritual existence in the next life? How do I make sure I never have to come back and suffer birth, death, old age and disease? This is a question that we all should be asking ourselves. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the answers are provided. Manmana bhagavad bhakta madhyaji mam namaskaru mam evaishyati satyam te pratijane priyosine. Always to think of God, to remember Him, to become His devotee, to serve Him, chant His names. In this way the mind becomes purified. As the mind becomes purified, one becomes peaceful, one becomes calm, one conquers the disturbances that plague the heart. And even in the midst of troublesome situations, one remains very peaceful and happy. So not only by following the principles of Bhagavad Gita will one attain eternal blissful spiritual life after death, but even in this life, one attains happiness. One attains a kind of serenity and peace that people are longing for but not finding in the things of this world, like money, name and fame and other pleasures. So I'm very thankful that you have been kind enough to very patiently listen to this lecture. I wish to thank Dr. Nerli for having been instrumental to invite me here, to the authorities in the hospital, to Colonel Singh and other authorities for having facilitated this lecture, to all those people from our temple who have come and prepared prasad and done other arrangements. And I do hope that you will take this message very seriously, ponder about it, reflect on it, think about it, ask questions, read more, try to understand the subjects in a more deeper way. It is a deep science. Today was only a very, very introductory lecture in a very simple way, but there is much, much more to be learnt. So I pray that you will all take this subject seriously. And if the talk today has supplied you some food for thought to think on this line further, then I believe that this talk today was successful. So if you would have any questions now, I will be happy to attempt to answer. Question answer is a very important process in spiritual life. Indeed, in any process of gathering knowledge, even in the medical field or any other field, the process of inquiry is very important. So I will be happy to receive any questions from any of you regarding the subject matter of today. As you note, this has nothing to do with some sectarian cult or some particular community or some particular branch of a religious faith. No. What we have discussed today are purely the laws of nature. And they apply to everyone, whether we are firm believers, whether we are atheistic, whatever we may be, the laws of nature will apply without discrimination. So the first question is that how is it that the Atma or the soul has come into the position of bondage, of karma bandhan? Is it out of its own free will, or is it because of the will of God? It is out of misuse of free will. Free will is forever a quality that the soul is imparted with. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Mamai vansho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manah shashthan indriyani prakriti sthani kashti. He says the souls or the atmas are my fragmental parts and parcels. Mama eva anshaha. And they are sanatana, they are eternal. They don't have death or birth. But presently, they are all struggling against the stringent laws of nature in this material world. Prakriti sthani karshati, along with the senses and the mind. So our cause of struggle here, of karma bandhan here, is that we have misused our free will. We have rebelled against the godly way of life and wanted to be independent enjoyers, separate from God. By constitution, by nature, the soul is supposed to serve God, to love God, because the soul is a part and parcel of God. The part is always supposed to serve the whole. The part can never be independent of the whole. For example, the finger that I have has value only so long as it is fixed to my hand. If this finger is cut and thrown somewhere, it has no value. But if there is a possibility of me retaining my finger, then I can spend a large amount of money to save it. So the value of this finger is not only in itself, its connection. So, because the Atma is part and parcel of God, constitutionally it is meant to serve God. And there is a relationship of love between the soul and God, which exists on the spiritual platform only. Now when the soul wants to leave this serving nature, rather than wanting to serve God, when the soul wants to be an independent enjoyer, bhokta rather than bhogya, then he is sent here into this material world to live a dream world of being an enjoyer. So this world, this place of karma bandhan, is much like a prison. When a citizen of the country misuses his free will and violates the laws of the state, he is sent to the prison where his freedom is restricted and another set of laws operates upon him, which is more stringent. And there he is forced to struggle. He has to break rocks and do so many other things. That is exactly the position we are all in today. So therefore the karma bandhan is coming out of misuse of our own free will, and God simply sanctions. So why does he sanction? That may be the next question. Why does he allow? Because, as I mentioned, the relationship between the soul and God being one of love, love can happen only when there is freedom. You cannot put a gun to somebody's head and say, love me. That cannot happen. It must come freely, voluntarily. So also, God does not want to force the living entity to serve him and love him. If willingly the soul is leaving the service of God, then reluctantly God lets the soul go. It is not that the government gets some pleasure in putting a citizen in a prison, but it is forced. So in the same way, God sanctions the false desires of the soul, and he is trapped here in this karma bandhan in this world, and eventually he comes to his senses and realizes that this is only a world of suffering. I should return to God and take shelter of him, and this is the only solace and success of my life. So that is the answer to the first question. And the second question was animals, yes. It is not that the second question was that if animals are free from karma bandhan, then what scope is left for them to make progress? It is not that animals are free from karma bandhan. They are receiving the reactions of karma. So they are bound by the reactions that was performed by the soul who is in that animal body now, but which were performed by that soul in a previous human life. So suppose there is a person now who has a human body. He is performing certain actions, as a result of which he will get a dog's body in the next life. Now, the dog will be suffering. He is in karma bandhan. But that bandhan or that bondage is due to actions performed in the previous life as a human being. So those actions are becoming a source of bondage for him here. And therefore he has to undergo so many pleasurable, enjoyable or distressful situations in life. So in this way, the animals also suffer or enjoy the reap the results of the karmas performed in a previous human life. So the question remains, what hope remains for them to progress? In and of themselves, the animals are not endowed with superior intelligence to reason like human beings have. They do not have the faculty to discriminate and to understand about spiritual matters. Therefore, consciously, they cannot make any progress spiritually. So, according to the law of nature, species, starting right from the lowest level, where the consciousness is most preliminary, just like the amoeba, and progressing upwards to higher and higher, more evolved forms of life, culminating in the human species. So this hierarchy also represents the particular way in which the soul naturally evolves after leaving body to body. Just as a student in a school will take entry in the first standard, and if all goes well, will go second, third, fourth, progressively he will naturally get promoted. I was told that in some villages, Karnataka, Maharashtra, many places, in the village primary schools, it is practically a policy that they never fail any child. Even if he has failed, got 0 marks in every single paper, he will be passed till the 7th standard. Somebody we know was complaining about his child, and he told the teacher, why don't you fail him and let him remain in that class, let him understand, let him realize that he should study. But the teacher said, no, we can't do that, because then we will be blamed that we are not teaching. So we have to pass everyone. So regardless, this boy is in the 6th standard, but he doesn't know how to write his name. So automatically he is getting promoted to 7th standard. Then there will be some exam. So in the same way, the souls that are in the lower species of life, suppose we start from the amoeba. Going up in the hierarchy, the soul will keep on automatically getting a higher and higher form of life. This is called spiritual evolution. There is a certain term that is decided by the previous karma. How much he will have to spend in that body, in the next body, and so on. He will go on evolving in this way till he comes to the human species. In the human species, the karma that he performs will again start taking effect. In the earlier species, he was simply reaping the effects of his karma of the human forms of life that he existed in earlier. So he will simply progress. He will simply move from body to body and survive on impulse, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That is all he is capable of doing. But the human form of life is like a junction, a very critical junction, where the individual can either fall back to the lower species of life because of sinful activities, he can either remain in the human species of life, or can be elevated to higher species of life within this universe, or if that person has become spiritually perfect, he can come out of this karma bandhan, come out of the cycle of birth and death, and return to the spiritual world, which is called the kingdom of God. Is your question answered? Is there any other question? Yes. The question of preta or ghosts. Of course, it is difficult to accommodate all the various concepts in the scope of one talk. But in order to answer that question, I need to introduce one more concept. And that is the concept of the gross body and the subtle body. What you are dealing with as doctors is only the gross body. The gross body which you can understand with the flesh, blood, bones and all the organs of the body. But there is another body which is called the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, which comprises the mind, intelligence and the false ego. And this subtle body is the very important factor for determining our next destination. It is somewhat like the inner clothing and the outer clothing that we are wearing. Just like we have inner clothing and inner garment, and then we outside that we wear another garment. Like that, the soul has two kinds of bodies. The soul is covered over by a sukshma sharir, subtle body, and also a gross body. When there is death, this gross body is left behind to be destroyed totally. But the subtle body, it acts as a vehicle for the soul to transfer it to the next body, to the next father's semen, according to the karma that has been performed in this previous life. So under the stringent supervision of the laws of nature, the subtle body carries forward to the next. The subtle body represents the collection of all our desires, and that will determine what kind of body is going to be there in the next life. So the subtle body creates an image of the next body even before you have left the previous body. So generally, after the soul leaves the body, there are certain periods where the soul has to atone or answer for the actions that have been performed in that life. And then the next destination is decided. And then it gets an appropriate body according to its karma, appropriate gross body. Sometimes, however, the subtle body does not get a gross body for quite a long time. In that condition, it is called a ghost or a preta. It is a very suffering condition for the soul, because the subtle body is a reservoir of desires. So the person has all the desires that he had earlier, but he doesn't have a gross body with which to fulfill those desires. Just like a diabetic wants to eat sugar but can't eat sugar. Very frustrating. So like that, this person has all the desires, but the instrument by which he can fulfill those desires, the gross body, is not there with him. An example of the kind of people who have to get a ghost body and survive in that for a period of time is a person who commits suicide. Because that is also considered to be a sin. This body is not our property. It is a property of God. Therefore, we have no right to destroy it, even if we are residing in our property, in our body. So such a person gets the body of a ghost. And after the soul leaves the body, there is a certain period. You have heard of the rituals, a certain 12 days, 13 days, the rituals are done. Because the soul hovers around, and a certain kind of special subtle body, a second subtle body, is created around the first body to enable it to facilitate its journey through the ethereal realm to a certain place where its destiny will be decided. That is called the preta, specifically speaking. There are many varieties, you will not get into that. But that is called the preta. In short, when one has only a subtle body, but not a gross body, then it's called a preta. Is there any other question? Was it too much of an overdose, or was it simple enough for... Okay, thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. I wish you a very happy new year, and I hope that your personal, domestic, professional and spiritual life may progress very nicely by the blessings of God. Thank you.